Hi, this is Steve Chandler, and I wanted to talk to you today about creative relationships. Now, creative relationships are different than what I think of as reactive relationships. I can actually have a life and a world in which my relationships, both business relationships and my personal relationships, are a creation of mine. Now, the other people aren't a creation of mine, but my relationship to that person can be a creation rather than me just reacting to their moods and what they say and what they do. If I don't create the relationships in the way I want them to be, they will descend down and become reactive relationships. And that's really the way the brain works about everything. If I'm not creating, I will be reacting. If I'm not stepping back like an artist from a canvas and saying, what would I like to create? What would I love to have happen? Then it will just happen to me. Those are the two choices. There's no middle ground. And people forget to do that. They forget that they have the capacity to do that. And that's really the basic human capacity that has humans be different than other species. The imagination, the ability to create. Why don't we use it with relationships? If we did, everything would get better. If I look at my dog lying by the door, he's looking around. It would never occur to me to say, look, he's planning his next week, because that's exactly what he's not doing. My dog has the kind of biological brain that has him be just a stimulus response machine. He scans the horizon, sees what's happening, and reacts to it. If I bring a bowl of dog food, he'll react to that. If I shake my car keys, he'll think we're going for a ride. If I open the door, he'll do something else. And he reacts to what happens. And that's how most of the life species do. That's also how human beings do it when they don't think and remember to create. They lapse back and descend and sink back into reaction. And when you hear them talk about their relationships with their family members, their children, and their relationships at work with their clients and with their coworkers, it's all reaction. People do nothing but talk about how they wish other people were different. And no one would do that who was really creating. If you were standing in front of a painting you were doing, you wouldn't spend all your time talking about how you wish the painting was different, how you wish the canvas was different. You'd start another one, or you'd make it different. Everybody would know you had the power to do that. And that's also true in relationships. So I want to really get clear, any relationship I have, am I creating the relationship between us, or am I just reacting to that other person? That's always my choice. That will always be what I'm doing, one or the other. Now, the bad thing occurs when I don't see that. It's not bad when I'm reacting. I'm like most people when I'm reacting. I'm allowing my feelings to be hurt. I'm allowing myself to get angry or upset or annoyed by you. I want to see I'm like all people when I do that. But the beautiful part is when I can see that that was only one choice I had, and I could have made another choice, and I can make another choice in the next moment. That's the freedom of creation. When I create the relationship, I can step back from it, and I can have it be the way I want it to be. Now, once I decide I want to create the relationships that I want to have, now how do I do that? What are some of the steps involved in this creation process? Well, number one step, the step that's most important to remember, is that relationships always get stronger, always get better, always get more loving, more supportive, when we raise our level of consciousness, when we become more awake to what's there, and we raise consciousness so we see more, we hear more, we're more open. And conversely, on the flip side of that, relationships always get worse when we lower our consciousness. When I don't want to know how another person is feeling or thinking, And when I try to shut the whole thing down because I don't think I can handle it, if I knew what you were really thinking about this or who you really were or what your agenda really was, that's when relationships get worse. So, for example, if I am in my office and somebody comes to me and says, your daughter's teacher is on the line and she wants to talk to you, and I say to myself, well, oh no, I can't handle that right now. That's not what I need right now. Tell her I'll call her back. Tell her I'm in a meeting. I can't handle that right now. This has been a bad enough day as it is, and I don't want to talk to my daughter's teacher. Something's probably wrong, and blah, blah, blah. So now what I'm doing when I'm thinking that way is I'm actually dumbing myself down. I am dimming the light in the room. So to illustrate lowering of consciousness, I used to work with Nathaniel Brandon, and he was such a brilliant mentor. And one of the things he would do is say, picture one of those lights in a room where you have a knob that you can turn the light up or turn it down by degrees, and you reach over to the wall and you can turn the light up in the room, and so you can see more and you're safer when the light is on. You don't bump into things. Or, on the other hand, you can turn it down, and when you turn it down, it's not as safe. It's really kind of scary. You don't know what's really there, and it's dangerous to live with consciousness lowered, especially in relationships. Now, let's look at the call I got from my daughter's teacher. I said, not now. I can't handle it. I don't want to think about it. I'll call her later. So now the teacher on the other end of the phone thinks to herself, boy, this is the little girl's problem. She has a father who doesn't even want to think about her welfare. She has a father who won't even take a call from her teacher. She must have a home life that's in chaos and dysfunction. So now the teacher, because I did not communicate, because I lowered consciousness, I was not open to a conversation, the teacher is now making up a story about me and my daughter, because people do that. And things get worse and worse. So when I finally do talk to the teacher, I have to talk to her through some story she's holding about me, and vice versa. And this is the disaster of lowering consciousness. I want to raise consciousness in every relationship that matters to me. I want to know what I know and see what I see and know even more. Now, I mentioned Dr. Nathaniel Brandon. He tells a story about a friend of his who came to him, and he was in his 50s, and he sat down with Dr. Brandon and he said, Nathaniel, I know you're a great expert in human relations and you teach your clients how to communicate better and have better personal relationships. I have to tell you, I am finally, for the first time in my life, really truly in love in the most deep way. I've met the woman of my dreams, and it's not like the other two marriages I had. This one, if I have my hope, if I have my dream come true, I really want this one to work. So I'm wishing, I'm hoping, I'm crossing my fingers. If I could have one dream come true here, it would be that this is the one that works. This is my last relationship. This is the one that really matters to me. So please, Mr. Expert, Dr. Brandon, give me some advice. What would you do if you were in the same situation? Well, Dr. Brandon looked at him and said, well, first thing I would do is have you listen to your language, because you're headed for a disaster based on how you're thinking about this. If you were in a business meeting, and this person was a really successful businessman, if you were in a business meeting, a board meeting, and you were explaining your business plan for the future, and you said to the board of directors, if I could have one dream come true, I'm really wishing and hoping that this business plan works for our company. I don't want to blow it this time. I really hope this thing turns out to be good. If you use that language, what would their confidence be in you? You would look like a fool. You'd probably be fired. So why is it in a business setting, when your business plan or anything you take seriously really matters, you use one kind of language, which is creative, assertive, and confident, and yet when you talk to me about your personal life, your language is like a child, wishing, hoping, dreaming, and all of that. That's the problem with your personal relationships, that you descend back down to life as an emotional child. It doesn't have to be that way. And the person said to Dr. Brennan, well, what would you do? And Dr. Brennan said, look, here's what I would do. If you want this to be a relationship that really works for you, I would make it my conscious purpose. And the man looked at him and decided to write that down. He said, what were those words? And he said, conscious purpose. If you want the relationship to succeed, make it your conscious purpose to have it succeed. Now, by the way, this formula, making something your conscious purpose to have succeed, works for building a client base. It works for some customer you're negotiating with. It works for working with one of your kids if your relationship and communication with one of your kids isn't so great. If you were to make it your conscious purpose to have a warm, trusting relationship, the odds of it happening would double, triple, go right through the roof. Whereas most people, they don't make it their conscious purpose to have a relationship be great. They absolutely do the opposite. Whenever it gets touchy, emotional, irritating, they turn consciousness down. There is no more conscious purpose for anything. So the point and the road to creating a great relationship is step one. Make it your conscious purpose to have this relationship be a great one. There's another element in creating relationships versus just reacting to other people, which is how most people do it. And that is the element of imagination. Imagination is so important, and we use so much of it during courtship. We really get creative and get fun and keep opening our minds to possibilities during courtship or romancing a new potential client or something like that, and then we just shut it down. We forget that it's there. Einstein said, imagination is more important than knowledge. Now, he didn't say knowledge is unimportant, but he did say that imagination is more important because imagination is what's uniquely human. It's how we can picture infinite possibilities and make connections and come up with creative patterns and surprise people and have them be delighted with what we do and say to create the relationship. Now, most people don't do that. They shut their imagination down by using their imagination to worry with. And I talk about this a lot, and that is that worry is a misuse of the human imagination. It is an abuse of the imagination. It's not what the imagination was intended for. The imagination was put into our minds and into our biology so that we could picture all kinds of possibilities and then live into those pictures and really create and make new things happen and have life be exciting. Now, what most people do once they pass a certain age is they begin to worry and bite their nails and fret and grip the handrest on the airplane as they think about where they're going and all the problems they're flying into. And this is a misuse of the imagination. Worry is not necessary. The more I worry about other people, the worse my relationship gets with them. I want to pick it up and lift it up and expand and get higher up on the ladder of consciousness so I'm no longer worried. Worry doesn't help me. Worry doesn't help the other person. The first step in getting out of worry is to pick it up just a few notches up to the level of concern. I mean, if I'm really worried about something, I want to at least change that and shift it to concern. Because if I'm now concerned instead of worried, I can get into action. I can act on my concern. Worry just has me frozen. It keeps me stuck, and it ruins relationships. I want to talk now about an aspect of relationships that's very important, especially to people in careers and professional life, and that is called persuasion. How do I persuade someone to do something? How do I enroll them in my idea? How do I get them to think like I do? And I was once teaching a course in communication, and a woman in the room raised her hand and she said, I know how to get my husband to do anything. And everyone in the room turned around. I mean, it was like they were interested. It was like, forget this guy at the front of the room. Now I want to hear what this woman has to say, because finally we have some information in this course that I can use. So I said, well, how do you do that? And she said, well, the way I get my husband to do anything I want him to is I just have him think that it's his idea. And everybody started laughing. Now, that was very funny, but at the same time, there was something very beautiful in what she said. There's a lot of truth in humor underneath the humor. We're really laughing most of the time because we are startled at how true that humorous thing really is. Aldous Huxley, the great thinker and author and writer and philosopher, had a very beautiful saying that I refer to a lot, and I think this is true about persuasion. He said, it is not very difficult to persuade people to do what they're already longing to do. It is not very difficult to persuade people to do what they're already longing to do. Well, okay, that makes sense. But how do I know what they're longing to do? That would be the next step. Well, to find out what my clients, what my children, what my partner is longing to do, I will ask, and then I will listen. And that's the beautiful part of relationships. It's not just figuring out what to say and what script to use. The most powerful part of a relationship is that really magnetic part. The part where I have the courage to create a kind of black hole in which that person now feels so free to spill everything, to reveal things, be vulnerable, be open, come off the top of the head, release an interior monologue, and be totally comfortable in sharing everything. That makes a relationship so beautiful. And that happens when I'm listening skillfully. And I'm listening like a master who listens instead of someone who doesn't know how to listen. So on the next track, I'm going to talk about types of listening and the skill people do not have in listening that after today, if they listen to this, they'll have that skill. Now I want to talk about listening. And I want to open this track with a quote from Brenda Uhland. She's a writer that I've admired for years. But here's what she says about listening. She says, and I quote, "Listening is a magnetic and strange thing, a creative force. You can see that when you think of how the friends who really listen to us are the ones we move toward, and we want to sit in their radius as though it did us good, like sunshine. This is the reason. When we are listened to, it creates us, makes us unfold and expand. Ideas actually begin to grow within us and come to life." End quote. So this is a tremendous skill called listening. It has all kinds of applications. It can have applications in my private life with my kids, with my family members, where I just have no agenda. I bring no agenda to the conversation. I just listen. Now, that's very hard for people. I've given assignments to people I coach, and they're having a hard time with someone in their family or their spouse, or they're having a hard time with someone at work. And my prescription to begin with is to say, how about you sit down with them and you have no agenda? And they say, well, what do you mean? Well, you have no agenda for this meeting. You're there to listen and that's it. You're going to bring silence. What a great gift to bring that person. You'll be silent. They will talk. That's it. And they say, boy, I don't know if I can do that. I mean, my whole role, my whole identity is tied up in my knowledge and my wisdom and how I advise people and how I'm always right and I know what to do. How can I maintain that if I sit and just listen? Won't I look weak? And the truth is, the opposite happens. If I can merely listen and I'm open and I bring my presence to the conversation, and I don't bring an agenda, I'm not trying to change anybody, they can feel that. And they talk and they share with me and the relationship gets better. Now, this happens in business situations too. Tom Peters wrote a book called Thriving on Chaos. And in the book, he talked about a Canadian bank executive. and that executive recalled a listening program that one of his regions instituted. For about 2 weeks, all the managers spent some time each day calling customers, asking, "How are we doing? How can I help?" The results were phenomenal. The customer feedback was terrific. "How magnificent that you thought to call. That's so nice." Morale got bigger and better, and a whole lot of new business came in. How are we doing? How can I help you? Listening, listening, listening. Listening is so powerful in a relationship. No agenda is so beautiful. It's so powerful. It's not weak. And I can't stress enough the entire process of bringing silence into a relationship as the ultimate gift. Not wisdom, not advice, not proof that I'm a know-it-all, but silence and openness and the ability to have another person share what's in their mind and in their heart. All of these are steps toward creation. All of these are paints on my palette when I step up to a canvas that's blank. Every relationship is a blank canvas, and I can choose how to create it with my listening, with my giving, with my openness, with my commitments, with my honesty, all the things I bring to it, create a relationship. I don't have to just react to other people and wish they were different. That's one way to live. It doesn't work. Final point I'd like to make on relationships is the power of good questions. Good questions. Wonderful questions. Questions that open people up. The physicist Isidore Isaac Rabi won a Nobel Prize for inventing a technique that permitted scientists to probe the structure of atoms and molecules. He won this prize in the 1930s. Now, when he was interviewed, and they asked him, "How did you become so great as a physicist? What led to the Nobel Prize? How did you get so good?" He said, "You know what? I think it dates back to when I was a child. I remember this very vividly. When I would come home from school, my mother used to greet me. And when she would greet me, she would say, 'Did you ask any good questions today, Isaac?' That's what she would ask me every day. It got my mind prepared for the power of questions. And those questions were things that led me to where I got. Not answers, but questions. We can learn a lot from Isaac Rabi. His whole career as a Nobel Prize winning scientist was based on the awareness that questions are more powerful, more valuable than answers. And so if I'm about to meet with a client, or let's say my son got into a little trouble and he and I are going to sit down, I don't want to run over through my mind all the things I'm going to say to make me look like a wise parent. I'm not going to run over in my mind all the things I'm going to say to my prospective client to make me look like I know what I'm doing. I want to run over in my mind certain questions I might want to ask. What are the gentle, opening up kinds of questions I would like to ask my son? And what are the questions I would like to ask this client? I might go on the client's website and snoop around and allow my curiosity to bloom a bit, because out of curiosity comes great questions, and the questions I ask are more likely to have me get this account and get this business than me sounding like a blowhard with a ton of great answers. Most people spend their lives trying to think of answers ahead of time to give other people, to put on the front that I know what life's about. The people who really bloom and blossom and succeed, especially in this subject of relationships, professional and personal, think about the questions. They become receivers. They open up, and other people love relating to them.